It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Tuesday morning, December 27th. I'm Steve Cole, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. Governor John Hickenlooper is entering his second-to-last legislative session as governor. He discussed the upcoming legislative session with Capitol reporter Benta Berkland.
This is one of your last sessions as governor. You have two more legislative sessions. Does that make you, going into this session, think a little bit more about your legacy since there isn't as much time left?
Well, I'm certainly very conscious of how little time is left, just because we have, you know, on my little handheld phone here, if you were to look at it, at the top of every single day, it says how many days are left in this term. So I don't worry about the legacy as much as I want to just get finished, or at least as close to finish as you can get on some of these things, you know, the things that really matter.
Such as?
Some of the workforce things we're working on right now. There's an apprenticeship program. We're going to scale up to not, you know, it's not just an apprenticeship for pipe fitters or trade, but it really is for all kinds of industries, right? Banking, insurance, advanced manufacturing, aerospace, cybersecurity. We're going to give kids the opportunity, if they want to, you know, when they enter their junior year in high school, they can go to work for 3 days and then go back and go to school for 2 days and study things that are relevant to the job they have. And they'll still be able to get their high school degree and hopefully get some credits towards college. Obviously trying to get a control, really limit the growth of healthcare costs, a high priority, what we call Colorado the Beautiful, but doing an inventory of all our most beautiful landscapes and places, having an assessment of all our trails, bike trails, hiking trails, and see where the missing links are. Do we have to acquire some more open space? Do we need to make sure we finish some trails in certain places?
This is an off-year election, so a lot of lawmakers talk about this being the session where something substantive may happen around some significant policy challenges, Tabor reform, transportation, the water plan. Do you think we'll see some movement? I know we do have a divided legislature.
I think both sides, Republicans and Democrats, are ready to roll up their sleeves and try and figure out what is the right compromise. I mean, look at the congestion on our interstates and our state highways. This is the time we need to get more funding for our transportation infrastructure. Part of that was going to be accomplished through the hospital provider fee, but we couldn't get through last year. We might not get it through this year. So we're looking at alternative ways we can fund some of that transportation infrastructure. The advantage of the hospital provider fee was it would give us health support also for making sure that broadband gets all over the state, making sure that we get more funding back into higher ed and K-12 education.
How supportive are you of trying to push a referred measure to voters?
You know, I don't really care how we get the resources, whether it's an increase in the gas tax, an increase in sales tax, an increase in income tax. I don't see any plausible way, anything that we can cut. I mean, we're not going to take healthcare benefits from people. We're not going to take away people's, some of their, you know, basic support, people with, you know, developmental disabilities or serious mental health issues. We're going to have to find some sort of new resources. And I'm happy to sit down with the Republican leadership and say, you show me where you want the resources to come from, and I will support you. And I think we're past the point where we can, you know, just kick the can down the road.
You've said before you don't usually like to come in and proclaim what's going to happen, or, you know, you want the legislature to kind of, those lawmakers, do their thing. Are you going to take more of a hands-off approach like you have before, or do you feel that sense of urgency with time running out?
My goal is to engage the legislature early, both Republicans and Democrats, and just try to listen.
We're coming out of a divisive presidential race. Does that change how you look at this session?
Maybe a little bit. We want to put a priority on trying to bring both sides of every issue together. Almost every issue, if it's still an issue, that means you've got someone who's for it and someone who's against it. We want to try and see if we can build bridges. No one party, no one person has all the right answers.
Thanks, Governor.
Always a pleasure, Benta.
That was Governor John Hickenlooper. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver.
3 years ago, floodwaters rushed down the Big Thompson River through Estes Park and eastward to Loveland, destroying stretches of the river channel and roads. Roads are being repaired, and the ecosystem is slowly recovering as part of Connecting the Drops, our statewide water series. Maeve Conran reports on how that recovery is crucial for the economy of local communities.
All right, we ready? All right, safety briefing. Don't touch your hands with the water.
Benjamin Swiggle is an aquatic biologist with Colorado Parks and Wildlife. He's giving some last-minute safety reminders to his team, which is about to start the annual fish count on the Big Thompson.
Use your net to lift it up and over any obstruction.
That old adage of not mixing water and electricity doesn't apply here. the fish counters walk through the water with electrodes that emit a small charge, not enough to kill the fish, just enough to stun them so they can be scooped up for the fish count.
Two more.
What we're indirectly measuring through the trout is how much bug life is going on, whether or not there's enough food for the trout in here, and the availability of gravel, clean gravel for reproduction.
Every fall, biologists count the fish to get an overall view of the river's health. A healthy river means a lot of healthy fish, trout in this case, rainbow and brown. And a healthy fish population means a healthy local economy, with jobs dependent on the fishing and recreation industry. Jack DeLuce knows all about that. He's been a fishing guide in Estes Park for 4 years.
Well, we get an awful lot of people. We'll probably end up with 600 people at a fish with us this year. So people come to Estes Park for a lot of reasons, and fishing's one of them.
An estimated 50,000 anglers descend on this area annually, spending an average of $103 each on everything from fishing guides and equipment to lodging and food. On this fall morning, Jeff and Elizabeth Anderson from Austin, Texas, are enjoying a day's angling on the Big Thompson.
Yeah, we're here for many things. One of them just so happened to be fishing. So we saw it was available here in beautiful creeks, so that's why we're doing it.
About $4 million a year flow into local coffers as a result of this river. As so much tourism depends on the fish, the results of the annual fish count are closely watched.
Good work. I'm thinking 85%.
The biologists conduct the count at two separate sites.
Nice,
this area is in good shape. There are shallow spots where the fish like to spawn and rock pools for winter habitat. Further downstream, it's a different story. Immediately after the 2013 flood, the fish population there was zero. It slowly recovered, but a concrete spill into the water earlier this year during road repairs set the recovery back. Permanent repairs have now begun on parts of the river and adjoining highway that were most damaged by the floods. But Swiggle says the repairs will also tackle problems dating back 40 years.
We've been educated from two floods, 1976 and 2013, and in both cases the flood won and the river lost. And now we're building a road that is resilient in the face of flooding, so when this happens again, and it will, we won't have to spend $500 million to repair the road.
The repairs will raise the adjoining road and create a wider floodplain, and that will help this river cope with future floods.
Rainbow 352. 330.
After collecting the fish, the task of counting, weighing, and measuring them begins.
254.
Keep an eye out for tags.
Okay. The number of fish in this stretch amounts to almost 4,000 per mile, indicating a healthy section of the river. Further downstream, as predicted, the fish count is much lower, in the low hundreds of fish per mile. But Swiggle says he's hopeful that those numbers will improve in the future.
Because ultimately, we'd like to see the number of trout that we find here downstream in the same abundance.
Repairs on that lower stretch started in October and will likely continue through June 2017. It's a multi-million dollar project, but it will be money well spent for the local economy if it means more river to fish in and recreate on. For Connecting the Drops and Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Maeve Conran.
Connecting the Drops is a collaboration between Rocky Mountain Community Radio stations and the Colorado Foundation for Water Education. Find out more at yourwatercolorado.org. Support for this piece is provided by CoBank.
The move to one particular renewable source of energy has had negative impacts on wildlife popular with outdoor sportsmen. Eric Galatis reports.
Farmers have plowed under more than 7 million acres of wildlife habitat, mostly to grow corn needed to produce ethanol gasoline, according to a new report by the National Wildlife Federation. David DeGennaro, the report's author, says the federal energy mandate passed by Congress in 2005 has put critical ecosystems at risk.
And in Colorado, it requires 42.5 gallons per mile driven of water to produce a gallon of ethanol. So it's a huge water consumption in a part of the country that really can't afford to using this excess water.
The federal renewable fuel standard requires plant-based ethanol to be blended into gasoline, and farmers responded in an effort to take advantage of rising commodity prices. DeGennaro says the destruction of native prairie, wetlands, and forests happened in spite of a law meant to prohibit widespread land conversion because the EPA failed to enforce the rules. Colin O'Mara, the Federation's president and CEO, says before the mandate, about 9% of corn went toward fuel, and today it's about 40%.
4 out of every 10 bushels of corn that we grow in America are being used for fuel, not for food, not for export, but for fuel. It's forced folks to look for new places to grow corn. And the places that have been hit the hardest are wildlife habitat, and most of which are very important to sportsmen.
O'Mara says row farming has taken over important wildlife habitat, impacting waterfowl, monarch butterflies, bees, and other pollinators, grassland nesting birds such as the prairie chicken, and mammals such as the swift fox.
As we've seen this insatiable government-created demand increase and increase, wildlife and sportsmen are the two that are losing out over and over again. This policy, well, very well-intentioned, has just created disastrous unintended consequences.
The report's recommendations call on Congress to revise the federal mandate to lower the demand for corn and to repair some of the damage that's been done on the landscape. This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.
The city of Glenwood Springs offers Christmas tree recycling to residents, which helps keep organic material out of the landfill. Real Christmas trees can be dropped off to the leaf collection site near the airport. Directional signs to the drop-off site have been installed along Midland Avenue. Trees must be free of ornaments, wire, lights, and tinsel. Glenwood will expand the recycling facilities for newspapers, magazines, office paper, cardboard, glass, and aluminum at the South Canyon landfill starting March 1st. The final day of operations for the Recycle Center on School Street will be Saturday, February 25th, and then the bins will be relocated to South Canyon. Last year, voters approved the City of Glenwood trading the property near Glenwood Springs Elementary with the school district for land in the confluence area near downtown. Roaring Fork School District plans to delay the start of the 2017 school year by 2 weeks to minimize the impacts from the Grand Avenue Bridge closure and construction on facilities throughout the district. Roaring Fork School District wants public input and has launched a new survey to gather feedback. Meanwhile, the district also needs to know who plans to attend which school in the fall. They will be launching universal early enrollment in January and ask that every family determine where their children will be attending school next fall. The process will allow the district to budget and hire staff, purchase furnishings and materials, and set up classrooms ahead of time rather than waiting to see what happens in August. You can find the proposed calendar and survey at rfsd.k12.co.us.